for over 130 years, McCormick has helped you make mom's lasagna to keep her secret recipe alive. Take over taco night, no matter how chaotic your day is. Conquer the bake sale, even if you get to it last minute. And craft the perfect Sunday brunch when it's not even Sunday. Because with McCormick by your side, it's gonna be great.
Hi, my name is Sebastian Maniscalco, and I feel honored about being Conan O'Brien.
That's very sweet.
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hey, welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, and some exciting stuff to talk about today. Joined, as always, by Sonam Obsession.
Hello.
And the sturdy and reliable Matt Gourley.
Sturdy.
Huh. Yeah, he is. You
okay.
are. You are a tugboat beating against the tide.
Yeah. Is he? Yeah.
He is.
Okay. Yeah.
You are very reliable, and you're a good fellow, fine fellow.
You're more fragile.
No, he's fragile, but reliable.
Where do you get...
Anyway,
yeah.
He's made of cartilage.
It's okay.
No actual bones.
You fight both of
you. I have something exciting to talk about. Enough of this dithering and dathering, which is we announced just a couple days ago that I have been making this show for HBO Max, which I believe is now called Max. We'll see what it's called in another few weeks. It's called Conan O'Brien Must Go. And it's this idea that's been in the works for quite a while, which you guys are well acquainted with,
mm-hmm.
where, as you know, I do the interviews with celebrities, and those drop on Monday. But then later in the week, we drop a interview with just anybody out in the world.
Fans. Not who, anybody. Like, they have to know who you are.
Yeah. Yeah, that's only 98% of the world's population.
Okay.
Boo, Conan, boo. No, you're right. It's fans. I should be more specific. Fans of the podcast. And I've really loved those conversations, and that's where the idea came from, which is just I love talking to people so much. What if... And I also used to do travel shows. That was one of my favorite things that I got to do all those years at TBS. So the thought originated, what if some of these guests that actually end their interviews where they say, well, come visit sometime, Conan.
Yeah.
And the idea came, what if I just show up? And so that was the origin for the concept of this show, Conan O'Brien Must Go. So we announced it, and they put together a little sizzle reel of some of the episodes that were already in the can. And people seem excited about it. You guys, you saw the sizzle reel, right?
It pains me to praise you,
mm-hmm.
but I just know a lot of other people worked on this. it looks so good. It really looks good.
Really
also, there's
fun.
A brief glimpse of you and me in there, and that really ups the...
I think that really adds to the show.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird because the data says the opposite.
You look at the data?
Yeah, I look at the...
Yeah, you really look at that
info. You've never seen data in your life.
No, I'm a big data guy, and I really got in there, and I like micro data and megadata, and I got in there, and massive drop-offs. No, it was, it's nice, because you see us talking to them, and then suddenly I'm there in their face, and...
And you surprise them.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, because you try to, and some are easier to surprise than others, but it was... We put together this kind of quick, maybe two-minute piece that ran, and then tweeted it out, and the response was really nice. People seem excited about the show. The show is, and this is important to point out, the show cannot be completed right now because the WGA, the Writers Guild of America, is on strike. So we stopped everything, and I'm really looking forward to finishing the show.
Yeah.
But we're not going to do anything until everything gets resolved and the writers get taken care of. So we are on hold for the moment.
You traveling is such a, you're so good at traveling. I mean, you're good at a lot. You're good at a lot of things. But you're really, when you travel.
You have mini strokes when you say anything nice about me. You notice?
Yeah, you're really funny. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how painful it is.
Yeah. You're going to have a neurologist soon say, Sona, have you been complimenting Conan recently? Because there's a lot of dried blood near your cerebellum.
No, but when you travel internationally, there's some of my favorite things that you've ever done.
Well,
and this is throughout the course of your whole career.
I like it a lot. I really enjoy it. And we have gone to some great locations. We have some other great locations planned. So I just find it so kind of reinvigorating to get outside the United States and meet people and run into all these people who have no idea who I am.
Yeah.
And find out what they're up to, what they're doing. It's just...
And you stick out.
I stick out everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I could go to Ireland and stick out. It's just so weird.
Yeah.
I'm just odd looking in so many ways, but it's... Yeah, very quickly identifiable. But so, yeah, Conan O'Brien Must Go on Max will be coming up, but not until the writer's strike gets resolved.
Can you talk about where you've been to already? Or is that you don't want to?
I think so. You can see in the sizzle reel the two places we went was to Norway to visit fans there.
Mm-hmm.
And that went really well. And then visited some fans in Thailand, in Bangkok. And that was fantastic. Anyway, it's been a lot of fun making the episodes we've made already. And if you want to see the promo, which is fun, lasts about 2 minutes, you can find it easily on YouTube.
On your channel.
On your channel.
Your channel.
Team Coco.
Team Coco. Team Coco. And it's called Conan O'Brien Must Go. And another thing I should bring up is that if you are a fan of this program and you want to talk to myself, Matt, and Sona, that's always possible. We do it all the time, and you never know. I might end up visiting you. So you can go to teamcoco.com/callconan if you would like to reach out to us and have a chat. Again, that's teamcoco.com/callconan, and you can experience how irritating it is to speak to me in real time.
You have no idea.
You have no idea. All right, we should get into it. My guest today is a hilarious comedian who has sold out arenas across the country. Now he has a new movie, which he co-wrote and stars in, called About My Father. And guess who plays his father in this movie?
Robert L. De Niro.
Exactly. Mm. Is it really L?
I don't know.
Oh, you just... Okay. Maybe... make it. That's like an attorney. Robert L. De Niro. I'm excited he's here today. Sebastian Maniscalco, welcome.
Listen, I know we've met.
You've done the show many times.
But we haven't really had a relationship outside the show. It's not like I'm calling you going, what are you doing Friday night? We're having some wine. You want to come by? I just don't know
why. I'd love it if you had done that.
But you didn't do it for me either. You know.
Well, that's not going to happen. Sebastian, there are rules, you know? I was the host of the show, and so no matter, you've become huge. You're massive. You're as big a comedy star as I can imagine. But still, you know, because I was the host of those shows, I had to have a wall up.
Okay.
You understand?
I do understand, but my question is, being a host of a show like that, right? And you got a lot of people coming through the door day in, day out. Have you made friendships over the years with a lot of your guests?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
I have with a pretty good number. You just click with people. And one of the things that it takes is just bumping into them someplace else. That's usually what has to happen, is you bump into them someplace else. So I'm sure if I had bumped into you and we were hanging out, you would have thought, this is the greatest fucking guy I ever met in my life. And then you would have signaled to the waiter, you know, more wine over here. And I'd have said, let me get it, Sebastian. This is on me. And you'd have been like, I love this guy. And then the next thing, I'd be at your house.
Yeah.
That would have happened, but we never bumped into each other.
Okay.
Because you were very careful not to bump into me.
Yeah, I didn't go out much.
when I was around.
No.
You were always out on the town. And the minute you read Conan O'Brien's in town, you would lay low.
Yeah.
You would lay low until I passed through. No, I'm very happy for you. You know, you're a very funny comic. You are an amazingly successful comedian. and you've done really well as an actor. And I was trying to think, what is it that Sebastian does that always made me laugh whenever you would come on the show? I realized today it was your amazement. You do amazement better than most comedians I know. You're totally amazed by how screwed up or fucked up something is.
Yeah.
And that is a big part of your personality. You stretch it out. Your physicality is really great. Your personality like inflates when you're saying, what's going on with this? Yeah. I don't understand. And there are a lot of comedians that do what's going on with blank. Your amazement is, you're the Olivier of amazement, I think. You really are. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, yeah. Now I'm constantly shocked and amazed at, you know, whether it be human behavior or situations or what have you. I just have an exaggerated way of looking at things. And yeah. It's been the way I've kind of looked at life since I was a kid. So it's not like it's something that I'm putting on for, I mean, obviously I'm it's comedy, so you have to exaggerate a little bit, but the seed of it is coming from complete awe and shock of what I'm seeing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that tends to be kind of the core of the comedy.
But you know what's great is you tie it in with your history as an Italian American. You know, your dad, I know, and we'll get to this because it's a huge part of your movie. And I cannot believe you got Robert De Niro to play your dad.
Yeah, we'll
I mean, this is most. There are people out there that say, "I want to make a movie about my life." I'll find someone to play my dad, and I don't even want to know who I would be able to get.
My wheels are turning.
I know your wheels are turning. It would not be Robert De Niro.
Orville Redenbacher.
But yes, we all do that. We exaggerate. We take who we are really, and then we turn up the knob to like 15 for the comedic sake. But the core of it is pure, and what you do is it feels. It's a very Italian attitude about what the fuck is this all about.
Yeah, it's in the culture. So the upbringing and my father is a huge part of my comedy just because, you know, he came from Sicily. He's when he was 15 years old, and he brought a lot of those old world values to America with him. And then in the upbringing, those kind of values were passed on to me. And yeah, it's just, I notice Italian people. I just did a TV show, and the other actress on the TV show was Italian. And when Italians get together, it's almost like other people are looking at us, and it's like we speak like dolphins. They don't even know the communication. Like, yeah, they're like, oh, I thought there was going to be a fight that was going to break out at any minute when you guys were talking. But it was, you know, we kind of just know there's a familiar way to how we communicate with one another. And then when we start speaking outside of the culture, a lot of people tend to see it and go, oh, wow, this is a different kind of take on life. And the take comes from pretty much my dad.
Yeah.
Who's a huge personality and has a lot to say. And I don't know. I just took basically what we were talking about at the kitchen table as a kid and then made a living out of it.
I have said for many years that it all starts at the kitchen table. I think you've said that there's almost a negativity with an Italian point of view that's built in. Constantly. Is that true?
Constantly negative. Everything is always bad. Nothing's ever good. We can't talk about it being good because if you talk about being good, something bad's going to happen. So that's...
it's just so sad.
It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And it's like I now have trouble enjoying the fruits of my labor, right? I don't know if you guys have this problem, but like I'm at a point in my life where I should really be extremely happy about what's happening to me.
Yeah.
Yet there is a, you know, part of me that is always kind of looking for the next thing. And am I doing enough? You know, like, I got a podcast. Is it good enough? I'm doing a TV show. Is it good enough? So I can't sit there and relax.
Right.
And I don't know if that's just me or is that people who get to a certain level in their career and feel like they got to maintain that level and you can't relax until I'm reading this book called Die with Zero, right? Because I'm having an issue with spending money. And
the issue being you're spending too much, you're not spending it.
I don't know what to spend. Like I grew up working middle class.
Right.
And it was the money was a huge topic in our house, and it was always save your money, because you don't know if your tongue is going to fall out and you can't do this anymore, right?
Which does happen.
I wouldn't worry about that one particular thing. Give yourself a break on
yeah,
that.
Yeah. During COVID, you weren't worried at all about COVID. You were worried. Don't worry, you're clear on COVID. My tongue! The tongue could go at any time. What?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, COVID was a great example. It's like you save for a rainy day, right? And the rainy day came, and I was still going, you know, like I didn't even use the savings.
Right.
I was just trying to figure out how I could make money and live off whatever, doing corporate Zooms, you know? That's what I was doing. I wasn't doing like stand up in my living room, but it would be like a moderator asking me questions, and I would be making the company laugh on Zooms. I did like 38 of these things.
Oh my God.
Over now, let me just put this in context for our listeners who don't know, and many people are aware of your massive success. You sold out 4 shows at Madison Square Garden. That's insane. That's an insane achievement. That's you and a microphone sold out Madison Square Garden, 4 of them.
How many of those people were on Zoom, though?
Yeah, no, it was half.
To be fair, they put a lot of TV screens. Look at me. Hi, everybody. I'm 60. I don't know if you've met me.
Well, I think that works.
When I Zoom, it's a TV. I was picturing televisions with rabbit ears. And a Zoom coming over.
In the seats? The televisions are in the
Let's
seats?
Let's just let it go. Okay. But my point is, Sebastian, I'm just wanted to put it in context for people that you've had this insane... There are plenty of people in the business that book a sitcom, but they're being careful with their money or this or that. You've had an unprecedented level of success that I can promise you right now is not going anywhere. You have talent and ability, and it's not going anywhere. And you have a devout following. But it's fascinating to me that when it stops for a little bit, you're thinking, oh my God, how am I going to make the rent?
Yeah.
And to me, this is a very common situation. And I do think that it may not be a coincidence that your dad immigrated here because famously, Bob Hope, you know, biggest comedian maybe of the 20th century, he immigrated from Wales as a kid and was incredibly poor growing up and tried to make it as a boxer, and his family were like stonemasons. I mean, he had nothing, and he scrounged and scrounged and scrounged and finally made it, and then bought up all the orange groves in California when he started making money. And by the time he's in his 90s, he's, I think, the richest entertainer in the United States of America. He's just an incredibly wealthy man. And I know for a fact that he would go into the Valley with coupons for Carl's Jr. Oh. And to me, that shit doesn't go away. And although you didn't experience that maybe firsthand, you inherit it from your dad.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very powerful.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to me, it makes sense that you're that way.
Yeah, but my whole challenge now is I got like one foot living in that world, and I got a 1 foot living in the world I'm in right now. And I'm trying to like just be a little bit more relaxed when it comes to, you know, enjoying my success. I guess that's the struggle I'm having at this current point
right
in my life.
It's a good problem.
Yeah, it's a good problem.
But I know what you mean, and I recommend medication. A lot of it, and all kinds. Don't even just get it from other people. Don't even see a psychopharmacologist. I think just get it, random pills from other people, and try them out.
Okay. Terrible advice.
Yeah. Well, I think you should do it immediately.
Okay.
Yeah. What do you think drives you now? Because you have had so much success for a long time, but I can tell you take this very seriously and you are very driven. Is that your dad's work ethic?
Yeah, that was instilled in me at a young age, just like work. You got to work, you got to go out. I mean, I was working at Fuddruckers when I was 14 years old. That was one of my first jobs, and never really stopped working since I was 14. So yeah, that definitely comes from my father. And, you know, I don't know, for me, I felt like it was extremely fun coming up through the clubs and getting my first spot on your show and doing these things for the first time, no one really knowing who I was. It was exciting. Now, it's a little, the pressure's a little bit higher to, you know, kind of maintain the standard, you know,
right.
Keep the jokes as good as they were, you know, that's the whole thing. It's like, you know, I did a comedy special that came out on Netflix this year, and I got kind of like people like, it's not as good as your da da da, or it's not as good as this, or not as good as that. So that never really happened to me before. Mm-hmm. And not that I'm sitting there looking at, you know, what people are saying, but if you got to be a fool not to like put your ear to the ground and go, is this hitting with people? I mean, are people kind of getting this? And I'm trying something different. You know, I normally am a physical comedian, so this one I went like, let me throw it back to the Rat Pack and wear a tuxedo. I don't wear a tuxedo because it kind of hinders my movement. I'm not as comfortable, but I'm like, let me do something different, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I got some backlash of, oh, he's not as physical as he once was. I'm 50.
No sympathy in this room. We all fought in the Korean War. Everyone in this room.
I died in the Korean War.
Yeah, yeah. And as a ghost, you're old. He's an old, out-of-shape ghost. A ghost with a low back problem. That's the other thing, too, is to me, the biggest driving thing is if someone's disappointed with something I've done, it makes me physically ill. It's that fear of failure, which doesn't diminish. You'd think it would diminish, and it doesn't. And if I'm someplace and it's a small group and I'm supposed to go up and give a toast or something, I get anxious. And if I feel like the toast wasn't good enough, and people are like, what are you talking about, a toast? You know, it's, you know, what are you worried about that for? I don't think that goes away.
No, that's with you. I could relate to that. My kid just had a birthday party, and I got on the microphone to kind of like, because we were going to play these games, these old school games at my mm-hmm. kid's birthday party. Mm-hmm. So I got on the microphone, hey, everybody, we're going to do this. And I got off, and I go, I just felt like I let him down, you know, like professional comedian.
And it wasn't as good as last year's kid's birthday party.
All you're doing is saying the pin the tail on the donkey's over here on the right, and the dunking board is over there, and the bouncy castle, you know, that's all you're there to do. No, I should have started with the bouncy castle. Then you elevate to the donkey. Shit.
Absolutely. And, you know, now that we're talking about this, this really, this happened last week. My daughter's birthday, and my wife and I went into, I guess, the parents read to the class on the day of the birthday of the kid. So we walk in, and we had our daughter's favorite book, and the plan was my wife was going to read half of it, and I was going to read half of it. So my wife starts to read the book, and she's burning through the book. I just like, and I'm looking at this as a, you know, as kids, you know, and I go, give me the book. And I've never read to kids before. It's a group of 6-year-olds. I've never read to them before. I started getting into the book, and then I started like incorporating the kids
and
doing my own lines from the book. We hate Veronica, don't we? Yeah. And I told the teacher, I go, I'd love to read to the kids every Friday if I could. Can I be a TA?
Yeah.
But I just think it's innate. It's in us to, if we get a group of people, I think it's innate for us to like not disappoint.
It's so funny you bring that up. We're going to have to hang out and get wine. I'm sorry, because there's too much common ground here. But when my daughter was younger, it was read to the kids day, and I went over, and this was to the school. You remember this? And I went over there, and I had a story to read. And the story, I remembered looking at it, it's only like 9 pages long because the kids are little. And I was like, there's not much to work with here. I remember thinking that, like flipping through it, like all I've got is 9 pages. So what is, I go to sit down and they go, okay, now, you know, Nev's dad, Mr. O'Brien. And I sit down and I notice that there's this like stuffed dragon right behind me whose face is kind of looking at me. So I kept doing these physical takes before I even read the book. I was like, well, kids, nice to see you. And And the kid started laughing really hard. So I kept doing all this shtick with the dragon, and it was doing really well. And the teacher came up, I'll never forget, and she put her hand on my shoulder and said, "You just read the book." You just read the book.
Oh my God.
And I was looking at her like, "You kidding? This is killing. You don't step on that." You know, but I know exactly what you're talking about, which is that need, you know, it's something, this is something else I want to talk about, because there's so many things. It's something I really appreciate about you is that you have your performing persona. And I've noticed whenever I'd come in and talk to you in the dressing room beforehand or afterwards, or even when I talked to you here today at the podcast, you are a very quiet, thoughtful man.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you encounter, you're so well known out in the world when you're yourself, with your family, with the kids, are there people that want that other Sebastian? Do you know what I mean? And you are a very dignified, intelligent, quiet guy who is not performing at this moment.
Yeah. People do think that's who I am on an everyday basis, you know, kind of not loud, but like over expressive and whatnot. Mm-hmm, when I get together with you, we're just kind of talking, it's normal and what have you. So, yeah, listen, I'm not life at a party by any means. All right. And yeah. I think that's the misconception with some comedians where you think, oh, invite the comedian's going to make the room laugh. You know, if you invite me over to your house and there's other people there that I don't know, I tend to be, you know, I don't call it shy. It just, it takes me a while to warm up to the group.
Yeah.
Even when I do these things, right? These podcasts, which I don't do a lot of them just because, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like, is this going to be an environment where I'm going to be comfortable to kind of be myself and like express my feelings? And then obviously with you six, I fit right in here.
We like to think it's a welcoming environment.
No, but like sometimes you go in, it's like, I don't know. But what do we, you know?
Well, also I've noticed that a lot of people think comedy is a thing. Like you hire a plumber, they come over, oh, I see what the problem is and they fix it.
I remember early on where people, a corporate event, you know, corporate events, generally speaking, are notorious for this. We're like, yeah, no, we're going to have a comedian. And then you get there and then it's just a dance floor. And then the people, you know, it's like you got to have the people near me. You know, you can't be, you know, 40 feet away.
Right. You're not Mussolini. Yeah. You know, you need people. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So then you would have to do a quick adjustment and go, all right, I'm going to perform now on the dance floor. Now I'm going to have to go, you know, and so you got to make it right. And it works in life too, I think. You know, sometimes I think you're in a situation where it's a social setting and, you know, maybe the expectation is, you know, for you to be funny, but you even look at the environment and go, this ain't the environment for me to like excel here. So then I go like, I'm like a shut in. I don't say nothing. And then my wife's like, why aren't you talking? I go, it's just not right. You know, like I don't know. I feel uncomfortable sometimes around like, went to a birthday party yesterday, kid's birthday party. Right. Yeah. I don't know. I just felt like I'm just going to hang out with my kids here. Cause I just didn't feel like any like pockets or any situations where I could get involved and really kind of
start to get something cooking.
Yeah.
Yes. I know exactly what you're talking about. I was at an event that I emceed. It was a really good cause. It was to raise money for wounded military vets. And so it's a great cause, and I was really glad to do it. And it's this big event. I'll never forget, I'm backstage, and I'm going to go out, and I know what I'm going to do. Just before I went out, they came out, and they played Taps.
Oh, shit.
Dun, dun, dun. You know, and they played Taps, and the whole room gets really solemn. And then a voice of God just went, "Ladies and gentlemen, Conan O'Brien." Oh, it's like, this is this is like a dare, you know? Yeah. How do I get from where we are now, which is very sacred and solemn and appropriate, but why did you want a comedian to come on after that?
Yeah, it's difficult to come out to that environment. I did something similar like to
yes,
a 9/11 gig, and they show a video of 9/11 and the people mm-hmm. and this and that, and then they're, please welcome Sebastian, and I come out and I'm like, okay, you know, let's get into dad.
My dad.
Or also you're doing comedy about how you've had a hard day. Oh boy, the day I've had. Oh really? Did two towers collapse?
Oh shit.
And thousands and thousands of people. Hold on. I know, but let me talk about my day. I mean, it's just impossible.
Yeah.
It's like a Harry Houdini thing where it's like, we're gonna take Sebastian Maniscalco and wrap chains around him and put him in a bank vault and throw him in the Hudson River. And then let's see if he can get out.
Yeah.
I know that, like me, you probably grew up very Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
Did you do the whole nine yards? Were you choir boy? You know,
altar boy. Did the funerals? Did you do the funerals?
No, I was because they could tell that I could actually enunciate pretty well. They made me what's called the lectern, which is the guy who reads, you know, certain passages.
We didn't have that.
Yeah. Well, they would, you know, it's usually like the priest does it, but they would have someone step in and read a couple of passages. And they were like, this guy can enunciate. And he knows
enunciate.
Yeah, literally. They're like, this kid enunciates. And in Boston, nobody enunciates. You know, everyone else just sounded like they had a bunch of clamshells in their mouth. And then in the corner, I was saying, and on the third day, he rose.
Jeez.
In fulfillment of the scripture, he's seated at the right hand of the Father. He'll come again in glory to judge the living and the dead. And they're like, we got to use this guy, you know? So they had me doing that. But I envied the, you know, like you get to ring the bells. I didn't get to ring the bells.
That was a bell guy. That was a bell.
I'm a bell guy.
Bragging. Yeah. You're bragging.
Yeah. It's like, I'm getting guys for a bank job. Do we have a bell guy? I'm a bell guy.
I held the water. You ever held the water for the...
No, where they fling the water at people?
So I had the little bucket and thing. Yeah, I did the whole thing over at St. Cecilia Parish in 1985. So, yeah.
Wow, you guys are so cool.
Yeah, aren't we?
You were at St. Cecilia's in 85, huh? I was at St. Ignatius, St. Lawrence. I worked a couple of churches. This is the 70s. I'm an older guy than you, but the 70s was really the time to be in a Catholic church. I'll tell you something. All of our priests, you know, were pretty much, they were either Italian or Irish, but we had one guy whose thing was to, he had always had change in his pocket. And as he was, and he was real like a club comic, and he would jingle the change in his pocket and walk around and, you know, and give the homily. And it was always in like a very folksy and kind of working jokes in and stuff. And then he'd always end the mass by saying, they're supposed to just say, you know, so go in peace to love and serve the Lord. You know, that's what they're supposed to do at the end of the mass. And be like, go in peace to love and serve the Lord. Have a nice day. Have a nice week. See you around.
Jeez, what? Like,
what's Jesus think about this ending? Different. Did you do confession? Did you go to confession?
Did confession.
I always froze in confession. I didn't know what to say. I would make shit up.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I would say I murdered a man. And so, I mean, I would say anything, but I didn't confess anything real.
I mean, there's nothing going on back then where, like, I didn't walk in when I was 13 and say, oh, yeah, committed adultery. I mean, there's none of that. It was
I coveted lying. My neighbor's wife. You got to see this broad.
Yeah, no, I did all that. I did the confession. I went every Sunday. You know, gave the money.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, my being Italian, you just give the money, and we never put it in the envelope that you're supposed to put it in. They give you like an envelope, you put it in, you know, and then you put your name. So you gave. You just peel it off, just a crisp 20 right into the
Nice. That made me think of like some wise ass kid. It was Christmas time, and they had this beautiful creche, you know, the little manger, and there was a, you know, everyone's gathered around Mary, and you know, everyone's there. They're the shepherds,
the wise men and the sheep, the donkey, and they're all looking over in great reverence, and someone, some wise ass, had taken the baby Jesus out and put a $20 bill down.
So it looked like,
oh, they're all, it's the almighty dollar. And I remember really thinking that was funny. And my mom swatting me, saying, no, that's not funny. But I don't think they ever found that Jesus.
Oh, no.
Well, let me ask you about this, because you've done something that is pretty extraordinary. You've made a movie that's about you and your father.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called About My Father. And as I mentioned earlier, so much to talk about here, but you did an extraordinary thing. You cast, and when I say cast, it'd make it sound like De Niro was hoping he got the part.
He auditioned.
Try it again, Bob. Bob, try it again. Bob, it's between you and two other guys, but I think you did a pretty good job. What does your father think about Robert De Niro playing him?
Yeah. So we wrote the movie. My writing partner, Austin Earle, and I wrote the movie. We kind of have the same pattern of life in the sense that we both married into money.
Mm-hmm.
And we've always kind of wrote about this life of two guys who kind of married a better cut of cloth mm-hmm. in our wives.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie kind of centers around my father and I going to a country club environment, which I do every summer. My wife's family has a home in North Carolina that we go to. Country club, very white. You know, yep. When I show up, I look like I cut the lawn. I'm dark. You know what I'm saying? So
sometimes you do cut the lawn just because you're like, I think I could do that better than that guy.
So it's just kind of these two worlds kind of colliding. The movie centers around that, but De Niro. Listen, we never set out to get him. We didn't write the movie with him in mind. You just don't even think that's a possibility, right? And then once I worked with him on The Irishman, and then mm-hmm. he subsequently came to see me do comedy at Radio City Music Hall. He came backstage. We talked a little bit. And I'm sure you've met the man. He's not like highly engaging as far as conversation. He's you know, kind of quiet to himself. So it's not like, you know, we had wine together. I don't have wine with nobody. So it's not like we had like a social relationship, but we sent him the script and he really gravitated towards it and he wanted to read it out loud with a bunch of actors. So we sat down, we did a table read. And then after that, he made the decision that he wanted to do it. Now, De Niro being the guy, the actor that he is, wanted to hang out with my dad.
Wow.
Right? Now,
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Because he's method. He wants to, you know, this is about your dad. Mm-hmm. He wants to spend time with your dad and absorb this man's characteristics.
Yeah. So they get on the phone and he wants him to come to Oklahoma, where De Niro is shooting the movie with Scorsese and DiCaprio. And my dad, who's a hairstylist, is going to go. First, he's bitching that he's got to take off work.
for this bullshit.
Yeah. You believe it's like, I got a dye job and a blowout on Friday.
He has priorities.
So he goes to Oklahoma and he goes to De Niro's home there that he's rented for the movie. And De Niro's asking him, when you wear your hat, how you wear your hat? And then my father's like, oh, I wear it like this. And when you smoke a cigar, how do you smoke it? Then he wanted to know some Italian, Sicilian slang that De Niro wanted to put in there. And, you know, and I'm dying to hear how this is going. I mean, you have to understand, this is a guy that had posters on my wall growing up, De Niro.
Of course,
you know, yeah. Casino, Goodfellas. My dad and I watched this guy, and now he's playing my father. So for me, I'm trying to wrap my head around it. So afterwards, I said, you got to call me as soon as you get out of there. All right? So he calls me. I go, how was it? You know, yeah, how was it? Yeah. That kept me there 4 hours. My dad's bitching about the hours.
Wow.
Then he's asking me, you know, like, am I getting paid for this? Am I getting like a little something for this? I go, Dad, I don't.
So perfect.
You know, like, I mean, listen, he was beside himself.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's also that you know, way we grew up of, you know, I'm going to lose clients and I'm here and this and that and the other thing. Then he's on set because De Niro wanted him on set because there's a scene in the movie where we're in a hair salon and De Niro, being the actor that he has, wanted to know how to do a dye job with the foil. Mm-hmm. So my dad is teaching De Niro the foil and this and that. And I'm looking at this going, the salon looked like the salon I grew up in with my father. And now he's teaching De Niro how to do hair. And I'm like, I was just so proud that my dad was alive to see this all going down, right? So De Niro didn't want him to leave the set. You know, like, where are you going? And he's like, oh, I gotta go back to work. We're gonna go back to work. Hey, tomorrow we got another scene. And Dad's like, well, I got a perm.
So that's fantastic.
Yeah. So now that they want to use my father in a lot of this promotion that we're doing for the movie. Mm-hmm. So we're doing, my father and I are going on Kimmel together.
Right.
And, you know, my father's really excited about him being involved in mm-hmm. the press.
Yeah.
Which I was nervous about because my father's the type of guy where when we're hanging around a group of people, he's the life of the party. As soon as a camera pops on him, he kind of goes into a shell. However, we did a press event in Las Vegas, and they were asking him questions. And I was like, well, this guy's like, my dad speaks broken English because, you know, he's from Sicily. And he's answering questions. I'm like, this guy, do we need a camera on him to speak proper English? I mean,
suddenly he's
like pronouncing words right.
Right.
So
he's another enunciator. We got another enunciator. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So, yeah, we shot the movie in Alabama, which was difficult for me just because I got two small kids. I was going to be there for 8 weeks. And, you know, I was wrestling with like, oh God, you know, like, again, me overthinking things. This is a great opportunity, yes, but then I'm also thinking I should be home. I'm a father. What the hell am I doing in Alabama? You know, got to be with my kids. But
I don't know what you're talking about. That's all bullshit. No, those kids do better when I'm not around. They thrive when I'm out. Yeah, so, but I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a family guy. So anyway, it was an unbelievable experience. It was a acting lesson for me mm-hmm. for 7-8 weeks, however long we shot this movie. There was a time where I had to cry. Now, listen, I'm a sensitive guy. I could cry, you know, in just conversation. But to do it like in a movie, I never did this before. And now I'm doing it with arguably one of the best actors of our time. He comes, right? And when he's supposed to cry in the scene, he's crying, right? And I ain't crying. I go, where is it? It ain't coming. And I'm looking at him like almost like a fan. I go, this guy's crying on you?
Can't you just grab one of his tears? That's what I would do. The minute no one's looking, get a De Niro tear.
Yeah, I was hoping I could get some spill off. But, and then they said, cut, and then did it again, still didn't cry. And then I told him, I go, bro, I got to talk to you, man. I need help here. So me and him privately go, there was an airplane scene. We go into the airplane together. I go, I can't get there. And he goes, well, I didn't know, you know, I was going to tell you, you know, I'm going to give you some advice, but I didn't know your process. I go, hey, there ain't no process, guy. I'm just hoping this clicks in soon, you know? There's no method or none of that. Right, I'm just doing the lines, hoping I can get sad.
Yeah. That is the method, actually. Yeah.
So
so he gave you advice?
Yeah, no, he's like, what I do is I think of my son. And he, in telling me the story, he starts crying.
Oh, my God.
Now, I'm crying because he's crying about talking about his son. I go, I got to use this. And I get out of the plane. And I'm supposed to be out of breath during the scene. Now, I got sciatica ripping through my right leg, right? And I don't really run because of the pain. Now, I'm running, crying with sciatica on a tarmac, trying to get out of breath, right?
So I come into the scene and I'm crying already, but I'm not supposed to be. But I'm like, fuck it. This, you know.
Use
edit,
this.
Edit it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm bawling throughout this. Cut. All right, we're going to do it again, guy. That's all I got. We're going to do it again. We're going to do this 9 times.
You need to rehydrate. That's so fantastic.
Yeah, it was. There was a lot of things. I mean, it's just just the way he, You know, I learned like when you're acting to have an activity. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, I would just get my mark, do the line, and that would be it. But he's like, okay, what am I doing here? Am I playing with that? You know, like just using the environment.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, you know, as a, you know, an actor who doesn't, I don't do this a lot. So I picked up a lot of nuances from him and then applied it to this TV show I just did, which definitely helps. So being around him, you just almost absorb a lot of this just by watching the man work.
So I'm sure you were heavily involved in editing and, you know, mm-hmm. Were you allowed to be in there?
I was allowed. I went in there. I didn't like dig deep into the editing. There was moments I go, I think there was a better take, and we looked at that, but I was like, not the whole like day in, day out editing of a film. I wasn't heavily involved in that, no.
My experience is whenever I say, what about that other take that was really funny? Guys will just look at me and go, yeah, we looked at it. It's not funny. And then I just, my penis retracts up into my body. It takes months to lure it back out again. Put out little crackers and stuff for it. A 1980s Playboy, Adrian Barbeau. Oh, nothing. Man. I said too much.
Man, a little bit more.
Yeah. I could talk to you forever. I'm a big fan of your work. You really make me laugh. But I also appreciate that you are a very thoughtful guy, and you are someone who has taken his career really seriously and made it all happen through sheer force of will and a ton of talent, but put a lot of work into what you've done. And I hope that you are able to find moments of relaxation.
Yes,
and that's I think there's no such thing as I want to get to the point where I'm just blissfully happy all the time, because that means you've had a neurological accident.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But what I'm hoping for is that you get better and better at finding moments where you say, Jesus Christ, look what I've done.
Yeah.
And enjoy and say, yeah, I'm going to get the biggest lobster they have here.
Without the coupon.
Hey, Sebastian, thank you so much for being here. And I'm excited for About My Father. I think that's so cool.
Thank you. And one more thing before we leave.
Yeah.
After we take the headphones off, right, we're going to do this. And then you're going, oh, yeah, that was fun, guys.
Yeah.
Can I get your number?
Look, you just crossed a line. You just crossed a line. And what if you just said that and 4 security guards walked in quietly? Yes, you will get my number.
Okay.
You will get my number. And then we got to get wine at some point.
Yeah, no, we have a lot of parties at the house. Small, nice group of people. You come up and...
I'm going to be... loud and jokey, even if I don't feel it. Even if I don't feel like this, the mood is right. If someone's up there talking about a disease they just got diagnosed with, I'm still going to go for it.
I think these are all children's birthday parties. So.
Oh, give me a crack. I kill at those things. I kill. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You got it.
It was great.
Thanks for having me.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.
Sorry. I just can't, like, I didn't even...
Go. Ready? Okay. No, go. Just go. Roll. Okay, Sona's laughing really hard, and for good reason. Ladies and gentlemen, Sona, don't cover up your mouth. Your laughter is the fuel for this podcast. I was just recently on the East Coast, and Sona... I got gerbled.
You got gerbled.
I got gerbled. Okay, this is true. God, this is the hardest I've seen Sona laugh in a while. I totally got gerbled. Oh, for anyone God. Who doesn't know what I'm talking about, I put it out there recently. As many of you know, the way for any fan of the podcast or regular listener to let me know when they see me strolling around and, man, I'm hard to miss, is to shout out, Katakai, as God made her. Some Katakai just works, but so many people shout out, Katakai, as God made her. And I think you guys have been with me, but when ask anyone who walks around with me, Adam, you've seen this happen. When I walk around, so many people shout out Katakai.
It's happened to me in public.
It's happened to
yes,
you?
Yes, it's happened to me.
Oh, that's cool. It hasn't happened to me.
Everywhere I go, I hear a Katakai, and I always turn and go, yes!
I saw it in San Francisco.
You saw it in San Francisco. That's right. Eduardo, you and I were walking around San Francisco, as we often do together. Oh, we have our little weekends. That's our business, not anyone else's.
No, it's nice.
We feel accepted there.
Yeah.
And anyway, recently I was talking to someone on the podcast, and I brought up, you guys were here for this, that one of the early guests on the late night show, actor Mickey Rooney, who in 1940 was the biggest star in the world. And Mickey Rooney came on the show, and I was talking to him. He got off track on something, and he was trying to talk about, he wanted to come up with the name Richard Gere. And he was saying, that actor, you know, the actor, what was that actor's name? And of course, there's that famous rumor about Richard Gere. So I'm trying to think like, well, what actor are we talking about here? And Andy and I at the time, this is like 1993. This might be the fall of 1993. We're both children doing this late night show. And we're trying really hard to help him come up with the name. We're like, well, who is it? Who is it? And Mickey Rooney says, all of a sudden says, and he says it very ominously, like he's telling a ghost story. There was talk of gerbils. And immediately Andy starts howling. I start howling. And we say, Richard Gere. And he's like, that's right, Richard Gere. And so we then decided, we start laughing. And then we decided there was talk of gerbils should be the new Katakai.
Yeah. Katakai has been retired.
Has been retired. And the new one is there's talk of gerbils. Now, that episode, I think, had just gone out. And where am I? I'm in New York City. And of course, it's very crowded. It's, you know, spring has sprung. Everyone's out and around. The weather's perfect. I'm in Midtown because I go to Sirius to record the podcast there. And I'm walking along and I just hear, there was talk of gerbils. And I was like, yes. And then I turned around and I walked over and I hugged the guy.
Oh.
I gave the guy a hug, which, by the way, he seemed happy with the hug. Had I sensed any reluctance, I would have let go after 15 minutes.
I think someone who's going to yell there was talk of gerbils out loud in public is going to be fine with a hug.
Well, yeah, he's happy with the hug.
Anyway, I told him he was the first.
Wow. Did it take you a second to process it, or did you immediately know what that was from?
I immediately knew, and I turned around, and there he was, and... very nice young fellow, maybe 20s, 30s. But I just immediately was like, I had to tell you, you are the first.
Oh.
And then it happened one or two other times while I was in New York City. And I thought, it's spreading. There was talk of gerbils.
You're reigniting that rumor. I bet Richard Gere's really happy.
I know. Well, maybe the brass ring will be to get Richard Gere to yell it to you in public.
You know, there's only one person angrier than Richard Gere right now, and that's the gerbil.
Okay.
He's still with
the
us.
The gerbil finally... Oh, yeah, no, these gerbils live a long time.
I would have thought the whole thing itself would have killed him.
Yeah. No. Oh, no.
They don't suffocate?
No. Lots of nutrients up there. Anyway...
Oh, man.
And so, somewhere there's a gerbil... With a,
I think we know where it is.
No, he's gone. He's gone.
Okay.
He burrowed out.
Yeah. He's constantly texting Richard Gere, and Richard Gere isn't returning his text.
He's ghosting him.
Yeah, he's ghosting the gerbil, and the gerbil's like, what the fuck?
It's a broken heart situation as well?
Well, the gerbil also was kind of happy that I put this behind me. There was a time where he tried to, I think he was on like a VH1 reality show for a little bit. Yeah, and he was hanging around with, you know, child star. And
Corey Feldman.
Yeah, exactly. But he's now, he finally put it behind him, and then now this is reignited.
He put it behind him, huh?
All right, don't do that.
Come on.
Come on, you're better than that.
That's the bar.
Come on.
That's the bar. You just hit the bar.
Grow up.
Sona H. Movsesian, how dare you?
You keep inserting false middle initials into people's.
I have a, so if someone comes up to us and says Kedekai, do we go like,
we're not allowed to acknowledge
catch up, dick.
Yeah.
Hey, prick. You didn't get the memo?
2022 much? Fuck off.
Eat shit, Kedekai. No, I don't know.
No, Kedekai is still accepted.
Okay, it's still.
Oh, it is. I thought it was retired.
No, it's not retired.
But
come
on. It's not redeemable for the same amount of praise.
I'll say this. I've been in this business long enough to know that any recognition or acceptance is a golden coin. I am not about to give people a hard time for saying the wrong thing to me when I'm walking by. But yeah, he was the first.
That's cool.
And I rewarded him. Yeah.
Gerbils.
Was the hug the reward?
That was a reward. Oh, I had another moment in New York City. So many things happen because you're just out there and there's a lot of fans of the podcast out there, which is really nice. And I actually mentioned this story at the SiriusXM upfront in front of a big audience of advertisers, and they found it quite amusing. But I'm walking with my friend Eric. You know Eric well.
Yes, I do.
And
Eric
and I have these long walks. And we're both interested in politics and history, and Eric just shouts at me most of the time.
Yeah.
He's
louder than I am.
He is louder than you, which is really saying something. But we have a great time. And when we go to restaurants together, he's always saying, what you don't understand about Lyndon Johnson.
Oh, my God.
Is when he named Abe Fortas to the Supreme Court, he didn't know. And people are always looking over it. But I love it. I love him. And we always have a blast together.
Wait, what didn't he know about Abe Fortas?
Hold on.
Okay. I'm kind of on pins and needles myself.
We'll get to you. I'll give you your Abe Fortas. Man, it's about time Abe Fortas came up on this podcast. Big shout out to everyone at the Lyndon Johnson Library.
Came up in the segment about gerbils.
Yeah, exactly. I segued. What other podcaster in the history of the medium segues from Richard Gere's gerbil to Abe Fortas, the Supreme Court nominee by Lyndon Johnson to the Supreme Court. Anywho, I really got Sona today. But anyway, this is good, guys. So I'm walking along, and we're headed to this restaurant that's actually in at the Museum of Modern Art that Eric knows about. He says, we should go to this restaurant. So we're walking in. This very, accomplished looking young woman who seems very cool. Last name is just, she says, hi, Conan, fan of the podcast. And we're chatting just a little bit before we go into the restaurant. And and she's great. She's fantastic. She seems very cool and cool. I mean, she seems very cool and cool. Yeah, that's great, Conan. Let me fix that part. I'm very flustered.
I saw a girl.
Now I'm leaving this in.
Now you have to leave it in.
I saw a girl and got excited.
Anyway, wonderful young woman, chat. And then I'm about to head back into the restaurant and I say, hey, would you like a selfie? I offer it up. I just say, hey, would you like a selfie? And she says, no, I'm good. But she said it just like, no, I'm not that kind of fan. Like, but she just says, no, I'm good. And I say, but a lot of people like to get a selfie. And no, and here's what she said. She said, oh, my God, you're needy just the way you are on the podcast.
Hey!
And I said, she had this kind of moment of, you really are that guy.
Yeah.
And I said, yes, I am that guy. But I thought that was a funny moment.
She thought you were, this is a character?
Well, no, I just think she liked experiencing in 3D. Like she's heard, sonically the neediness, but then she ran into.
Saw it in person.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
a
whole new thing.
Man. Yeah. So you didn't take a picture with her?
No.
Oh.
And then the crazy thing is,
I thought eventually she'd be like, okay.
No. Yeah. No, she didn't. We got a courtroom artist to do a sketch of both of us.
No.
Yeah. But anyway, we may hear from her too, because I think, because this is crazy, I'm not even kidding, I ran into her a second time in New York.
When you were just following her, trying to get her to take a picture with you? No,
yeah.
You sure you don't want a selfie?
You want a selfie? Selfie with me?
Why don't you want one? I was in a dirigible flying over New York for her. No, I accidentally ran into her again, and I gave her David Hopping's info, and David Hopping may hear from her, in which case maybe we'll link up with her on the podcast because she can tell the story herself. Oh, but anyway,
she probably won't get in touch with him.
No.
No.
She wants out.
She lost that number. Yeah.
I call David every 4 minutes. Have you heard from the lady yet? That didn't want the selfie? All right. Let's move on to bigger and better things.
Goodbye.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sonam Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Nick Liao, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Cody Fisher at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Eduardo Perez. Additional production support by Mars Melnick. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It, too, could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.